Talk and the Good Food Hour are brought to you by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner. Happy New Year, everybody, along with Chef John Ash. And I get a chance to wish you, my friend, a Happy New Year, too.
Well, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Did you have a safe and sane New Year, or were you out till 4 a.m.?
Oh, gosh. I was out carousing around. I think I was probably in bed by 8:30 or something. As you get older, you know.
Well, listen, you spent 40 years in the hospitality business or so.
I hated it, you know. I always hated New Year's Eve, you know, because you got a lot of amateurs.
Out there dining and drinking?
Yeah.
Yeah. And who have you brought with you today?
I brought my daughter, who's been on the show before, Emily.
I'm back again.
It's wonderful.
Well, and also because we have a special guest later in the show that Emily is very familiar with.
And our special guest does not know that Emily is sitting in
today.
That's
right.
So this is going to be a big surprise.
So hopefully she'll remember her.
Oh, she'll remember you for sure, I'm sure. And how did you celebrate New Year's Eve?
I, like much of Sonoma County, was sick and on my couch.
Oh, no. Oh.
So it was very mellow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you seem in good spirits today.
I'm good now, but yeah, boy, it's going around.
Well, first of all, we want to start the New Year celebration with a wonderful, wonderful accolade that John Ash's most recent book received, the 18 Best Cookbooks of 2023, according to Food and Wine Magazine. Whether you're shopping for yourself or a loved one, you can't go wrong with one of these 18 books. And here it is, the Hog Island book of fish and seafood. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah.
That is fabulous.
I'm never sure how those things get selected, you know, but
who cares?
But it's always nice.
Well, they write, I hate to start out with a pun about a place known for its oysters, but the Hog Island book of fish and seafood is a pearl. If you're nervous about working with crustaceans and seafood at home, this book calms all stormy waters by building on foundational cooking basics, roasting, steaming, grilling, pan frying, and so much more. The illustrated techniques make a huge difference and offer a visual guide to things like shucking and filleting. Ever since I've had it on my shelf, I find myself reaching for it like a familiar book at the local library. And that's from the editors of Food and Wine Magazine. So, congratulations.
Oh, it's very sweet. Yeah.
And you don't know when these things are coming. They don't say, oh, dear John Ash, we're going to
review your book or something. No.
It's like someone tells you, hey, did you know?
Yeah.
So, this is great. Are you familiar with the book, Emily?
I've seen it once or twice. Yeah, I've seen it. It's gorgeous.
I think this is going to go a long way because once a major periodical starts to list these books, other reviewers take note because, look, we can't see all of them. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books that come out.
So many.
And you most of the time, it's a peripheral glance.
Right.
They're going to pay attention, and I won't be surprised if other periodicals, newspapers, online reviewers start referencing this book, too, as, hey, this one kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And shouldn't have. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah,
and
really.
I will say, we didn't get to all of our best of books last year. The last year, the interviews, but your book, along with John Finger, was on my list of my 10 favorite books. And I know it seems obviously like, well, of course, yeah, your buddy John Ash. No, independent of me knowing John and doing the show, it's a really terrific book. And the more you look through it, the more it reveals its charms. And because when you look through it, there's so much fabulous information. It can be overwhelming, but if you just keep this as a reference, and if you pick up some mussels or you pick up some clams, grab the book.
Yeah.
You cover the whole world of shellfish and regular fish, crustaceans, and even tinned fish, because I have a lot of tinned fish, and I kind of get in my old rut. Well, I'll open up
make
some
a
cream
fish sandwich.
I'm with a tin fish. I think I do smoked oysters. We had actually smoked oysters on Ande for New Year's Eve, and it was
That's pretty. That's pretty sexy.
I guess that was pretty sexy.
Yeah,
but I am eating a lot more tin fish, and thank you for including a chapter on that because it certainly has been popular the past couple of years. Also, there's little fish and other gifts from the sea and. Just a squid and octopus, everything I kind of know a little bit about, but I'm intimidating probably to when I go to the seafood counter buying it because, would I really do with it?
Well, it encourages you to try them because all of them, I think the thing that I say to people all the time about seafood is that it's the easiest thing to cook. That if you want to keep one thing in your mind, it is don't overcook it.
Okay, that's one thing to remember. Yeah. And if you can do that, your chances are pretty good at coming out ahead. That's good. Another one of my books that I really enjoyed was Rentaro, the Japanese food from an Izakaya in California. The author is Chef Sylvan Mashimo Brackett, and the restaurant is in San Francisco. He was born and raised in Kyoto, moved to, I love his story, to the Sierra Nevadas, Nevada City, and was raised in the Sierra foothills by hippie parents. So he's a fascinating guy. Grew up on, I guess, eating a lot of Hangtown Fry and those type things. And he's gone to great lengths to really find sources to represent his style of home-style food. It's an eating and drinking establishment. That's what I learned this term means.
Izakaya.
Bar and food together. So he was very, very enjoyable. He wove wonderful stories on the show with John and me and talk about how to make world-class dashi and the certain shaved bonita that he imports. And it was somewhat of an esoteric conversation, but he really brought it, I think, into language that all of our listeners could understand and appreciate. So that was one of my favorite books, too. And his love of yakitori.
Yeah.
Also. And you, of course, enjoyed yakitori on your trip to Japan, didn't you?
Oh, my many trips.
Many trips to Japan.
I went to Japan for 12 or 13 years or something. You know, for a shorter period of time as maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And the last time I went, I was there for 3 months.
So you ate a lot of yakitori.
I did.
Let me reference one more book before we take a break. And that was one I know you enjoyed, John, was that The Core of an Onion.
Yes.
Peeling the rarest common food by the inimitable Mark Kurlansky. Yeah. We've had Mark on the show probably 4 or 5 times over the last 20 plus years. All his books, every one of them is worth investigating, whether he writes about cod, oysters, or salmon, or milk and dairy foods, the history of the food of salt, the history of the food during the Depression. Yeah. He is very scholarly, but has a marvelous wit. And this interview was one of my most enjoyable ones of the year. He also introduced me to a number of new techniques and new words that I never knew existed. Like, do you know the word lacriminatory, Emily?
No, I don't.
L-A-C-R-I-M-A-T-O-R-Y. It means any substance that induces tears.
Got it.
I learned this from Mark, too.
Oh.
So if you want a wonderful little read, and he's got about 100 recipes in there also.
Yeah.
Look for The Core of an Onion, Peeling the Rarest Common Food by Mark Kurlansky. You can go online, of course, and listen and reference all 29 of our author interviews from last year. They're all archived at KSRO.com. Coming back, John Ash and beans. Boy, oh boy, this article you wrote in the Press Democrat on Wednesday was truly eye-opening, and we'll delve into that right after this.
Whatever the story, have your say.
I'm sick of them wasting tax dollars on useless indictments.
It's the topics that matter to me.
KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk.
Hey, you're up next.
Ugh, my throat hurts so bad. There's no way I can sing tonight.
Here, try these.
Vicks VapoCool Drops.
Yeah, Vicks VapoCool Drops has maximum strength menthol with a rush of Vicks Vapors.
Ooh, I can already feel it.
I told you. So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Please welcome to the stage.
Vaporize sore throat pain fast with Vicks VapoCool Drops.
News anywhere. Stream KSRO from your smartphone or smart speaker. KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk, FM, AM, and online.
Trade in your old furnace with Henry Mechanical and get cash for your clunker. Upgrade to a more efficient heating system today. Home of the free second opinion. HenryMechanical.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with the Ashes, John Ash and daughter Emily. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
This is always nice to have you in the KSRO kitchen.
It's always fun to be here.
So did growing up, did Dad ever make beans for you?
He did. I don't think I wanted them very much when I was young. There were many instances of try this seared ahi tuna sandwich and things like that. That, yeah, as a kid. Sorry, Dad.
But beans were not something you'd say, Dad, when are you going to make beans again?
No, now I would love them. But I do remember beans being on the stove often and kind of walking
this
right
this article
by.
You wrote, not only just for the photography, is so stunning. Describe why you chose these 11 beautiful, different colored Rancho Gordo beans for the cover of your Press Democrat article.
Well, I'm a fan of Rancho Gordo. And for those who don't know, they... Steve Sando, who owns it, has been a real pioneer of growing, especially heirloom beans from all over the world, but focuses on Mexico, and because there are so many different varieties of beans that are there, and they have the most. I say in the article, they have the most wonderful names. You know, that you run into, like. What are some of those, Steve?
I'm not sure if my bifocals are working. Maybe I could pass these to you, Emily. You probably have younger eyes than I do.
Well, we've got, is it Puglia lentils? It looks like something pink bean, Royal Corona bean.
Oh, yeah.
Cocoa bean. Yeah, any of those? Any of those sound interesting?
And orca beans, because they look like an orca, like whale. Anyway, there are all kinds of them.
Well, the photography is beautiful, and I think there's about 8 or 10 beautiful bean recipes in the PD, and we're going to post these on our KSRO Good Food Hour website today. White bean and grilled asparagus crostini, very easy to do.
Stupidly easy. And you could use, with any of these, the great thing about beans are that you can use any bean you want. And that's why I belong to the Bean Club, Rancho Gordo's Bean Club, and a couple times a year get a big box of heirloom beans, often ones I've never heard of.
That's the exciting part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
The next recipe is James Beard's Boston Baked Beans.
Yeah.
What bean do you use for Boston Baked Beans?
Well, you usually use navy beans or something like that. You know, a small white bean of any kind, but it doesn't matter.
I love that you use 4 pork spare ribs or 8 baby back ribs in your beans.
Well, that was James Beard.
That's James Beard.
Yeah.
And speaking of James Beard, I just want to do a shout out for a new series called Julia, J-U-L-I-A. It's on Cinemax HBO. Do you know about this?
I know about it. I need to watch it. I've been hearing people rave.
Fabulous. Yep. We're at about episode 4 or 5, and we just saw the episode with James Beard.
Oh.
When KQED buys the series from WGBH in Boston in 1961-62, it's the first station to sign on in the country to say, we'll actually carry it. Well, they're blown away.
Wow.
And they said, we'll fly out James Beard and husband and the producer, all expenses paid, put you up at the Fairmont Hotel, and you can regale our executives at KQED.
Cool.
So it shows her coming to San Francisco, and during her presentation, who shows up but James Beard.
Yeah.
Flew down from Portland.
Yeah.
And they go out partying and drinking all night long. He takes her to some of the special clubs in the Castro.
Nice.
And let me tell you, it's a great episode.
Special clubs at the Castro.
That actually, they had one of the drag queens who was dressed like Julia Child.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love it.
And it's a great episode. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And it's colorful, and acting is really good. And there's a good dose of why Julia made such an impact. There's a lot of Judith Jones in there, her editor from Knopf. Mm. It really is.
And we've talked about this, but it was her book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. She tried to sell that to, it was like 20 or 30 different
publishers.
They all
said, no way.
They said, nobody's going to buy this.
Yeah. And because Judith Jones said, this is really something. Yeah. Not initially an issue, but she convinced them. And, of course, it became a massive bestseller. Yeah. Vegetable chili with garlic rice. Oh, I like that. Yum. There's an easy one. These are pretty easy to do.
They're totally easy.
Now, here's something.
And you can make them ahead.
This one sounds a little esoteric, but I love it. Italian marrow beans. Oh, it's not marrow bones, is it?
No.
It's called marrow beans.
So that's a variety of bean. But again, you can use any bean you like.
With tuna.
Yeah.
Now, is this seasonal for spring, fresh fava beans with young pecorino cheese?
It's a classic in Italy. Springtime, when springtime comes, early spring, the pecorino is made, and the old guys, I remember seeing these old guys sitting around, taking the fresh fava beans, fresh baby fava beans, opening them up, eating them without peeling them or doing any of that kind of stuff, along with fresh pecorino cheese. And something to drink.
The other recipes are giant white bean salad, haba bean soup or stew, Mexican black bean soup. There's also black bean veggie burgers, spicy ginger hummus, white beans with, what was it, duja? Duja, N-D-U-G-A, the salami?
Yeah.
Mm. Kale
you
and breadcrumbs.
You actually made that,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, I know. I made it, and I loved making
and
it, let me tell
it's,
you.
So the picture that's there is Steve's handiwork.
Yes, if you look at the photo, that was Steve who made that particular dish.
He set that up.
It's an interesting ingredient. It's around, and we have, even locally, a couple of people who make it. It's spreadable salami, spicy salami.
It's delicious. Once you've had it, you'll keep it in your refrigerator.
Like a pate? Different.
Spreadable.
Yeah.
It's spreadable.
It has a lot of fat in it, which makes it spreadable.
That's what makes it so delicious also. We'll take a break. You can look and try some of those beautiful dry bean recipes, rediscover the wonderful world of beans by Fresh Chef himself, John Ash, on the KSRO website. When we come back, we will talk to a world-class author, restaurateur, marketer. She is everything you'd ever imagine a culinary career could be, and we'll introduce you to her and her brand-new cookbook. Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash and daughter Emily, joining us today.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Simpson Sheet Metal is helping kids in our community to become million-word readers through Read on Sonoma. This year, 1,200 elementary students in 6 local schools are participating, winning prizes as they read. And Simpson Sheet Metal is proud to be a part of it. Here's Barbie Simpson, owner of Simpson Sheet Metal.
One of the things I cherish most in my life is my grandkids. Spending time with them gives me such great joy. Our favorite thing to do is cuddle up by the fireplace with our blanket and read together. As we read, I watch their comprehension grow. They love new and funny words like whippersnapper, hullabaloo, and bamboozled. I can see the amazement in their eyes as they listen and grow with each and every word.
Lifetime outcomes for children who learn to read and build comprehension include better health, higher income, and increased graduation rates. Simpson Sheet Metal and Read On Sonoma, dedicated to improving children's lives in Sonoma County. ReadOnSonoma.org.
Finding new employees can be a challenge for businesses of all sizes. Tune in to Ask the Expert with Next One Staffing the second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 12:30 to 1 p.m. Brian Buxbaum and Danessa Maynard are your resource for identifying, interviewing, and hiring the best employees in Sonoma County. From executives to entry level, they do it all. Ask the Expert with Next One Staffing Tuesdays from 12:30 to 1 right here on KSRO with podcasts at ksro.com.
I'm KSRO's Jeff Woodworth with Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast. Following the generally cold and cloudy overnight, we can anticipate more clouds and around an 80% chance of rain to give us daytime highs in the mid-50s. Later this evening, we can look to partly cloudy skies and overnight lows in the mid-30s to the low 40s. There is around a 40% chance of more rain returning as early as Monday evening. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 96.9 KSRO.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. Good morning. Happy New Year, listeners. And many of you have been with us for these past 37, 38 years, America's longest running radio food show since 1987, John Ash and I. And we have a wonderful guest today, and I must say that I am in love with this book, John. I'm just going to go say it right out front. It's called The Cookie That Changed My Life. And more than 100 classic cakes, cookies, muffins, and pies that will change yours. The author is Chef Nancy Silverton. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Nice to talk with you this morning. And we have a special surprise for you. Are you ready for a surprise?
Yeah.
We have in the studio a former employee of yours who worked with you at Campanile many, many years ago. And she is delighted to be able to say hello to you this morning.
Hey, Nancy. And Emily Ash. How are you?
Hello, Emily.
Hi.
Nice.
It's fun to be here with you.
Well, Emily learned that you were going to be on, and she said, I'd love to come in and say hi to my former employer.
Many fond memories, Nancy, of running over to La Brea Bakery after working our shift at Campanile and seeing if there were any broken cookies in the case that I could steal. So.
Which I'm sure there were plenty.
There always were more than I needed, I'm sure, but they were fantastic and I loved them.
Well, it's so nice to have you on the show today, Nancy. The first line of the book, and I know everyone starts with this question, is did it all start and how did it start with a peanut butter cookie?
Yep, and that's, in, you know, and actually I wanted to call, when I was trying to think of the title of the book, because, you know, look, at there's been so many baking books there. I think everybody that came before me stole all the great titles, like the Cookie Bible or the Cake Bible, you know, and on and on and on. And so, you know, naming a book is really not easy. And sort of I wanted to make the title part of the story. So my initial idea, or what I wanted the book to be called, was The Peanut Butter Cookie That Changed My Life, because it was a peanut butter cookie. And the sales department at Knopf came back right away and said, nope, that will never work. There's too many people out there with peanut allergy. And so I was very disappointed, and my editor came back and said, okay, how about if we just call it The Cookie That Changed My Life? And I thought, okay, I could live with that because they came back with all these other crazy titles. And then marketing came back and said, well, that's not much better. Everybody's going to think it's a cookie book. Oh. And I'm like, no, they won't, because it says, and more than 100 other classic cakes, cookies, muffins, and pies that will change yours, right? Well, sure enough, every time I run into somebody, they'll say, hey, love that new cookie book of yours. But it's not a cookie book. It's much more.
So, okay, well, it is much more than that.
But, you know, so why did it change my life? It changed my life for kind of two reasons. And, of course, obviously, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But it got me to write another book, which is how it changed my life. I never thought I would write another baking book. But nor did I think that I would ever return to the classics as I did and really, really look at them and scrutinize and bake over and over and over and over again until I felt, in my opinion, I made the best of that version. And it wasn't simple, you know? I mean, it's so easy to make something like a simple bran muffin, for instance, and you make it and think, okay, that's good. I'm going to make it. I'm going to sell it. But to really look at it and not settle for it just being good, right? That it needed to be life changing, and that involved many, many attempts over the things. During those years, I had those times. You know, in 2021 and 2022, I had the time to really look that carefully.
Well, I love in the book, one of the questions you put out to people is, who needs another banana bread? And you include a banana bread in there.
And you use a square pan, which blew my mind.
Right. Now, so what, and you know, with some of the recipes, and the banana bread is a good example, is that I did change that recipe from some earlier renditions of that banana bread, not drastically, but because I was already making a banana bread where I put bananas on top. But I thought the part that put it into that life-changing category was the fact that baking it in a square pan and putting the bananas on top gave you more of the best part of what I think is the banana bread, is those bananas that are baked on top. Mm-hmm. So by just switching it from a loaf to a square low pan is what, for me, did that trick.
And also the corn muffin recipe and the baked goods with breakfast. Now I realize I must go and get a corn creamer. I thought I had all the tools I would need, but is a corn creamer important, huh?
Yeah, well, first of all, I've always had them at my restaurant because that's how we make creamed corn. So it's a Japanese and it's not an expensive tool, right? It's flat, so it's a great one to just keep in your drawer. But what is great about it is that when you slide that corn cob down the length of that corn creamer, it slashes the kernels of corn so that all of the milkiness of that corn, all the flavor, comes out of the corn. And that's how we do, you know, our cream corn. And then we mix it back together with the corn, and then we cook it, and we add more butter to it, no cream to it, and that's our cream corn. But I had never thought about using that liquid that came from that corn and reincorporate it both into my corn muffin and into my corn bread. And I can't believe no one's ever done that before, because it turns what never tasted like corn. Like, cornbread never tastes like corn, I don't think. I think cornbread tastes like semolina, or it tastes like honey. Or
polenta,
if you add to it. But never corn. And by creaming that corn and not discarding the liquid, which I used to do in the past, thinking that that liquid is going to make my cornbread too heavy, or my corn muffin, as liquid does when you just add thin liquid to a batter. But by heating it up, it does exactly what happens with cream corn, is it immediately solidifies and you get like this pudding mixture of concentrated corn flavor, and pulling that and incorporating that back into the batter gives, I think, the most exceptional flavor.
Well, I think it's going to be the 2024 stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
The corn creamer.
Oh, yeah. So I've never actually seen them in stores, but they are available online.
Okay.
So the other thing I love about the corn muffins is that you use corn flakes in the topping.
Wow.
Right.
That's wild.
I thought about, you know, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes I feel like something, a baked good looks naked without some sort of a topping, whether it's a streusel topping or a little bit of cinnamon sugar, you know. In the case of the corn muffin, there was something always so, it didn't scream eat me, you know. It was like shiny and flat. Do you know what I'm saying? When you look at a really great baked item, you can't help but wanting to dive into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I've always thought about corn muffins. They kind of just never, they didn't have that finished look. And I didn't know, I didn't want to put nuts on it, and I didn't know, and I didn't know, and I didn't know. And I, for some reason, you know, a lot of people make those cornflake cookies, right? Mm-hmm. I had never made one before. But I did go to the health food store. I didn't want to use a packaged cereal that had lots of sugar in it. I wanted to just have those corn flakes, you know. And I made that topping, and it's really a beautiful topping. I have to say, and I do say in the recipe, the thing about putting that topping is that it really only does have a one-day shelf life. Oh. And the next day, that topping does soften.
Okay.
It's not crisp anymore, but it has a great look when baked and eaten that day.
We're only going to be able to touch on some of the recipes. It's 500 pages, Nancy Silverton's new book. It's remarkable. On to the cookie section. John, were there any cookie recipes that struck you?
Well, the one whose name I loved was chocolate salami.
Yes.
What is that?
Okay, so that was sort of a recent discovery, although I've now found it in many different cookbooks, so it's not an original idea. And it's a way of using up old biscotti, although if you don't have old biscotti to use up, then I do suggest a crunchy cookie that's an alternative. But, everything in this book, just to say, is a baked item. Nothing's fried. There's no puddings, anything like that. Everything has a baked component. And the baked component in this chocolate salami is the fact that it came from a biscotti. And I have a wonderful biscotti recipe in the book that's next to it. But basically, it's you take that biscotti and you chop it up, and you just combine it with a ganache-style mixture that is firm enough to slice. And then what people do with it, and I do it in the book, is you roll it in powdered sugar, and you can even tie it up with butcher twine, and it looks like a salami with that natural or that white mold, you know, that adheres to the surface of the skin.
Wild, the wild story. I love that you have my favorite cookie, the wedding cookie, and you reveal that it's the only cookie your mom ever made.
Yep. And she used to call them nothings, and because it just kind of disappeared. And that was another one, you know. I've made versions of them. I think I have a version of them in my pastries from La Brea Bakery.
Mm-hmm.
But I did some changes with these, and I added some larger pieces of pecans, which is my favorite nut to use, and a lot of people use walnut.
No, pecans.
But so that you have a little bit of texture, and then I flavored the sugar. But those, you know, again, in this book, because I talk about it as classics, not that I love that word, but I wanted to put a book together with all of the recipes of everything you really want to make at home. And that's something you want to make at home. I always like to say, like, if you say to me, I'm a home baker, and I love making croissants at home, and I love making Queen Amon. I'm like, yeah, you're a liar. Nobody loves making that stuff at home, you know? I mean, it's tedious. It's hard. You need a lot of kitchen space. You need, you know, in and out of the refrigerator, right?
Yeah.
I mean, my advice is find a great bakery that makes a great croissant, you know, and make the things that really are what you want to do at home. And that's what I think... that's what I think this book is made with. I don't have any. There's only one laminated. Well, actually, two. I use a rough puff pastry, which is a lot easier than a traditional pastry where you have that butter block and you have to get that laminated into it. The rough puff is much easier. But I do have one of those Portuguese custard tarts in because it's such a fantastic recipe. I couldn't help but put it in. But other than that, there's no laminated doughs. It's just really if you like to bake, it's the basic dessert.
Well, that's why the wedding cookie is such a great example. It's so simple. You know, anybody can do it.
We'll take a break. Yes. Nancy Silverton telling it like it is on the air with John Ash, Steve Garner, and Emily Ash joining us for the program today. The cookie that changed my life and more than 100 classic cakes, cookies, muffins, and pies that will change yours back after this.
Hammering the big issues.
They stick to the facts.
Your source for real talk.
They always have great conversation.
This is KSRO Sonoma County's News Talk.
Simpson Sheet Metal is helping kids in our community to become million-word readers through Read on Sonoma. This year, 1,200 elementary students in 6 local schools are participating, winning prizes as they read. And Simpson Sheet Metal is proud to be a part of it. Here's Barbie Simpson, owner of Simpson Sheet Metal.
One of the things I cherish most in my life is my grandkids. Spending time with them gives me such great joy. Our favorite thing to do is cuddle up by the fireplace with our blanket and read together. As we read, I watch their comprehension grow. They love new and funny words like whippersnapper, hullabaloo, and bamboozled. I can see the amazement in their eyes as they listen and grow with each and every word.
Lifetime outcomes for children who learn to read and build comprehension include better health, higher income, and increased graduation rates. Simpson Sheet Metal and Read On Sonoma, dedicated to improving children's lives in Sonoma County. ReadOnSonoma.org.
United Way of the Wine Country is not your grandparents' United Way. United Way's Earn It, Keep It, Save It free tax assistance program, supported by Redwood Credit Union and a gifted band of volunteers, helps low to moderate income families and individuals claim the tax refunds they deserve at tax time. United Way trained volunteers have helped return over $90 million in refunds to our community. United Way and our coalition of community partners need your help. United Way trained volunteers train in January to greet tax clients and assist with preparing their returns. They make sure all tax credits are claimed by those who qualify for them, such as the California Earned Income Tax Credit and the Young Child Tax Credit. English and Spanish speakers can help by volunteering this tax season as preparers, intake coordinators, and interpreters from February through April. To learn more, visit the United Way website at unitedwaywinecountry.org. Volunteering together for our community, we are united for good.
When you're looking for a dining experience that's packed with flavor and fun, try Simmer Claw Bar. Southern-style boils with a Cajun twist are their specialty, and they're confident you'll love them too. But they're more than boils. The menu features fresh seafood, delicious sides, and a variety of craft beers on tap. With a large seating area and multiple televisions, enjoy the flavors of the bayou at Simmer Claw Bar. It's a perfect night out with friends and family. Text SIMMER to 85100 for a special discount.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Nancy Silverton joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO kitchen to talk about her new book, The Cookie That Changed My Life, and more than 100 classic cakes, cookies, muffins, and pies that will change yours. We want to jump right to the pie section. There's a great cake section. We have a number of these great cakes, but we're pie people, Nancy, if you don't mind. John, why don't you start off this section?
Well, I loved the fact that you had it's not all sweet in the book, that you had meat pot pies. And you mention, and actually we had him on the show actually quite a while ago.
Yeah, Calum Franklin. Yeah, he joined us from England for a live interview for the Pie Room.
From his restaurant called the Pie Room.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you have a section of your menu devoted to pot pies.
Yes, we do at Kiesbacher. And actually, with Calum, I brought him out last year when I was operating the restaurant at the Roosevelt Hotel to do a pie event where we served, I think, three of his pies in the lobby of the Bearish. It was is what my name in the restaurant was called. And now we're bringing, Calum no longer works at the Pie Room, mm-hmm. but we're bringing out the woman Knox, who was his right arm, and she's going to be doing another event at Kiesbacher to celebrate those pies. And they were definitely inspirational in my love of savory pies, but also in creating the type of pie, you know, that that this is. It really set the bar for me.
Wonderful idea. John, you wanted to, well let's go stay in pies and tarts, because we have to ask Nancy about chess pie. So Nancy, about 15 years ago, John and I learned we shared a love for chess pie. We decided to do an on-air chess pie tasting. We baked 10 chess pie recipes between us, and we had our producer do a blind tasting between us, bringing us a sampling of each of the 10 chess pies. John and I ranked them. John ranked his recipe first. I ranked my recipe first. But that's how much we love chess pie. And I grew up in Kentucky, so I've been eating and making chess pies, well, eating them for over 60 years and making them for about the last 30 years. And to see that you included a chess pie recipe warmed my heart.
Well, you know, it's funny. I did not grow up in the South, and I had one once at a restaurant, and I immediately fell in love with not only the texture, but definitely I love acidic desserts. And because of the vinegar in mm-hmm. this pie, right, mm-hmm. I fell in love. Now, I never really got the recipe from the place I had it in, and I don't even remember where I had it. But I definitely did research, and I think, I mean, if you look at the ingredients in it, and certainly the method, I'm not even sure how traditional mine is. It seems like mine might be more a sort of a cross between a vinegar pie mm-hmm. and a chess pie. What do you think about what, I mean, I saw cornmeal in it, you know, I did the breadcrumbs in it to hold that vinegar, because the whole batter is so unstable because it's so loose. Am I correct, or is your recipes different?
No, this is really fascinating. We've spent way too much time on this show over the years talking about chess pie and transparent pie and Hoosier pie and sugar pie. There's a whole genre, as you know, of these style of pies. Chess pie traditionally has a mixture of flour and cornmeal as a binding and some vinegar and eggs and everything else in there.
Right.
And there's a coconut chess pie, there's chocolate chess pie, there's vanilla, lemon.
Its genesis was that it was
poor people's pie.
But it was something that poor people had, ingredients that they had.
But I'd never seen a recipe, Nancy, that used bread in there for a stabilizer. That was
you
wild.
Know, I don't know if I ever saw it or I thought of it, you know, because this is a version of one I made a very long time ago. I don't know if I saw that in another pie and thought maybe that would be my answer to keep this stabilized. Mm-hmm. It was my binder, you know.
Well, I love this
bread that was soaked in vinegar.
So would you include in the introduction to this where chess pie, C-H-E-S-S, where that name came from? Do you remember?
And I don't know if I'm correct. You know, again, it's only done from research. I bet it. You know, I know that it was a desk. They called it in the kind of the group of Southern pies that were called Desperation Pies. Mm-hmm. Again, just made with very humble ingredients, right?
Yeah.
And it, is it, when they say whatever was in my chest, you know, C-H-E-S-T,
yes,
meaning your pantry, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah, that was one. And then the other explanation that I grew up with, yeah, in Kentucky and southern Indiana was, well, what kind of pie is this? It's fantastic. What is this? Oh, it's right. just pie.
Yeah. And it's just pie. Yeah, exactly. Just pie. And that's what I said in here, too. When somebody said it was delicious, she said it was just pie.
The other pie recipes, of course, you referenced the Portuguese custard tarts that have gone, yeah, viral. This is a wild recipe. It's a kind of a custard style of pie, but very, very different as far as how it's constructed. Mm-hmm. And you took a lot of time. You became obsessed with this, as you say in the book.
Well, I became obsessed with it because I had just returned from London, and it was there that I ate versions of that style of pie. And I was so intrigued by the texture of the custard, like, because it was unlike any other custard pie I had made before, and I was determined to recreate that. And so when you don't know what you're doing or you've never done it before, the easiest thing to do is to look online. So I looked up Portuguese custard tarts, and there was, you know, and this again was why I wrote this book, is because now with the internet, you don't need to own cookbooks, or people think they don't need to, and so you look up a recipe and you get 5,000 versions and you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say, start with my book. At least if you trust me, they'll be in this book. But with that Portuguese custard tarts, I probably tried a dozen versions, and everything that they promised it would be, it wasn't. You know, like, wow, you know what to say, but you don't know how to give the recipe,
yeah,
for it. You
know? Uh-huh. So,
and this was, and I learned to make it from, and I write about it in my introduction, when I was going back to London at one point, because I have a restaurant there, and I mentioned to a salesperson, hey, he was selling me some olive oil from Portugal. I said, hey, I am so frustrated. I'm trying to make a Portuguese custard tart. And he told me, look, the best one I ever had was from a chef from Quebec who now has moved to London. And I'm like, I'm leaving for London tomorrow. And he hooked me up. And this guy gave me the best, you know, tutorial in his kitchen. And they were fantastic. And everything that he did was different from what these recipes online did. And so I thought, look, maybe a Portuguese custard tart today does not have the same popularity as, say, a carrot cake, right? But I feel like in a few years it will, so I'm going to include it in the book. Because, you know, everything in this book is recognizable, from an apple pie to, raspberry crumble bars. I mean, they're all what we already know, but there's a small handful. The cannelé is another one. You know, 10 years ago, nobody knew what a cannelé was, and I had them in my pastry book from La Brea Bakery like 15 years ago, right? Because I had discovered this thing I had never heard of. But it's like panna cotta or creme brulee. They become household words, you know, and I feel like the Portuguese custard tart, that's where it's headed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're down to the final minute or two. I must reference the fabulous coconut cream slab pie with bittersweet chocolate.
Yes.
Love that recipe. I've made a lot of coconut cream pies. It's going to change it. I'm going to start using the rice flour in the filling, like you suggest.
And one of the really simple ones are key lime pies.
Oh, yeah.
I love key lime pie.
Another great recipe, too. And then in the bread basket, thanks for the layered buttermilk biscuits. Those,
yeah,
you've really refined those. Also, make sure you use frozen butter.
Let me tell you real quickly, before we end, the one you got to try, I think, is the carrot cake. And the two changes I made to that is that it's made with roasted carrots.
Yeah, that was
and
wild.
Carrots. And the problem with carrot cake was there was always all these pieces of carrot in there, but it never tasted like carrot, just like cornbread never tasted like cornbread. And then I turned that cream cheese frosting into a brown butter cream cheese frosting. And I think that carrot cake recipe is life-changing.
Nancy Silverton, the cookie that changed my life, and more than 100 classic cakes, cookies, muffins, and pies that will change yours.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a splendid 30 minutes.
Yeah. It has been.
Thank you for writing the book. It was a delight talking with you. Emily, say goodbye.
Bye, Nancy.
Bye, and let me know what you think about the chess pie. Please make it and let me know. Okay.
I promise we will. Hopefully we'll talk. We'll talk again. Bye bye. Nancy Silverton, a great book. I know you're going to want this book. Go out and check it out. Bye. After this.
Sunday afternoons 3 to 6 on KSRO is brought to you by Cobran Financial. Can you retire? Find out with Cobran Financial.
Ungaro & Sons is your trusted home services provider in the North Bay. Their reputation is built on four generations of providing quality plumbing, heating, cooling, and electrical solutions. They offer up